We'd like to welcome everybody to the next installment in the Family Learning Series. Today we're going to be learning the topic of costumes and creativity on Purim to prepare for our upcoming Yom Tov of Purim, which we're all very much looking forward to. Before we begin the shiur, I'd like to thank those that made the shiur and the evening possible. First, a big thank you to the Berg family for sponsoring tonight's shiur in memory of Aryeh's grandfather, Shlomo Ben Lev, Mr. Steve Kosberg. And we want to thank all those who helped with technical assistance as well as the food for tonight's program and learning, and that's Josh Eagle, Ari Levison, Aryeh Berg, Ari Chiskia, and their entire team. So thank you so much. Let's begin. The opening question for tonight's shiur of costumes and creativity on Purim is, what is the origin of wearing costumes on Purim? We turn to the first of the Makoros, and the truth is that the sheet that you have in front of you, the Makoros you have in front of you, are only the costumes part of the shiur. The creative part of the shiur was the creativity of the Mar Makomos not even appearing on the creativity Makoros not even appearing on the sheet, but that will get to the second half of the shiur. What is the origin of wearing costumes on Purim? So the Pasuk in Parshas Vayelech, the end of Sefer Dvarim, Dvarim Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Yud Ches, tells us, V'anochi haster astir panai bayom ahu. Hashem tells us, I will surely hide my face on that day, which the Gemara in Chulin, at the very end of Maseches Chulin, it has drushos of where you find certain personalities and characters in the Megillah hinted to in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Chulin Daf Kuf Lamed Tes Amud Beis, it understands to be a hint to Esther Min HaTorah Minayin, the Gemara asks, Where is Esther hinted to in the Torah, and quotes this pasuk? This is based on the fact, obviously, that the word Esther means hidden. This is the source for hiding one's true self on Purim. There is also the idea of doing the opposite of what is normally done throughout the rest of the year, and that comes from the pasuk in the Megillah itself, in Perek Tes of the Megillah, the end of the Megillah, the ninth Perek of that it was supposed to be that the Jewish people were going to be beaten and destroyed, and instead we came out the victors. Everything was switched, everything was turned on its head, and that's the way that we approach many things, particularly with costumes, on Purim. So the idea originates even in the Torah, and especially in the Gemara, where Chazal tell us that there are hints to Esther in the Torah, and there are hints to dressing up in costume on Purim. The minhag of wearing costumes on Purim, though, seems to have originated in the 1400s in Germany. It's quoted in the Shaul Shetshuvos of the Mari Mintz, who was one of the Rosh Yeshiva in Italy. It originated in Germany as well as Italy, but in the 1400s. And it's also quoted in the Ramah. The Ramah, at the end of Aruch Chaim, in Siman Tov Reish Tzadi Vav, in Hilchos Purim, in Hilchos Megillah, the Ramah in Siman Tov Reish Tzadi Vav, at the very end of Hilchos Megillah, Se'if Ches, the Ramah tells us, there is no prohibition of men and women dressing up in each other's clothing on Purim. He, you know, allays all fears, and concerns of cross-dressing, because he is alluding to the potential problem of the pasuk in Parshas Kisetze, the pasuk in Dvarim Perek Chav Beis, which tells us, "Lo yiyech li gever al isha, v'lo yilbash gever simlas isha," that a man is not allowed to wear, generally speaking, a man is not allowed to wear a woman's clothing, and vice versa. And we have to be careful about this on Purim. The Ramah's whole context, the whole reason why the Ramah got onto the discussion of costumes, was in the context of cross-dressing. And he says, the Ramah says, that it's allowed on Purim, and he knows that this actually, just again, historically, the origin of wearing costumes on Purim began anywhere between 100 and 200 years, 150 years, before the Ramah enters onto the scene, both in general and in his halachic commentary. So the Ramah is telling us that there's no problem. The Eliyahu Rabbah points to the Eliyahu Rabbah also in his halachic commentary points to a couple of psukim in the Megillah. And I want to point out, as we read these psukim, this is where the generic, basic, classic, you know, costume on Purim is every girl dressing up as Esther and every boy dressing up as Mordechai, Achashverosh, or Haman, but particularly Mordechai. That comes from a pasuk in the Megillah we're about to read now. The pasuk tells us that, first it tells us, Vayikach Hamanus Halavush V'yasasush V'yalbeshus Mordechai. This is the pasuk in the middle of the sixth parak of the Megillah, when the Megillah starts to take a turning point. The story starts to take a turning point. And the second pasuk is when Haman dressed Mordechai. So the first pasuk is that Haman dressed Mordechai in royal, in regal clothing. The second pasuk tells us that it's just a description of Mordechai's royal clothing as he left Achashverosh's palace. So that's, if you ever wonder, it's not that people can't, I mean some people, it's not that many people cannot come up with a better idea for dressing up. There obviously are many creative options. Many creative options. But where it originated from Psukim and the Megillah. So if it originated from Psukim and the Megillah, it originated from specific Psukim where it describes Mordechai dressed in regal clothing. That's why every boy is Mordechai, or Haman, or Achashverosh, and every girl is Esther, or for that matter, Vashti, or what have you. You come to the most interesting source, what could be the most interesting because it's the most far-fetched source for dressing up in costume on Purim, and that's the Gemara in Shabbos. In the next of the Makoros, the Gemara in Shabbos, I have no clue whether I'm going in order in the Makoros, so you'll follow me on the sheet. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Samech Vav on the base, tells us in the context of what one would be permitted to go out with on Shabbos. There are prakim in the middle of the 24 prakim of Masechet Shabbos, so there are a couple of prakim that deal with what human beings, particularly women, but other, you know, men, women, are allowed to go out with on Shabbos as a gzeira mishum hotza'ah, as a decree against carrying, the prohibition against carrying on Shabbos. And then there's a parak b'mebeheima yotza, with what can an animal go out with, certain types of jewelry and adornments that an animal and men and women are allowed to leave their personal rishus, their private domain, their rishus hayachid on Shabbos, and enter into the rishus harabim. And the Gemara tells us, Shabbos 66b, Samech Vav Mabez, in the context of what you're allowed to be permitted to go out with on Shabbos, one of the items the Gemara says you're not allowed to take out with you on Shabbos, you're not allowed to take out of the Erev, is Lokatmin. Lokatmin, or Loktamin, as explained by the Gemara, is some type of mask used as a joke, or as a sick joke, to scare young children. And this is where the Gemara at least says in Shabbos, this is where masks and costumes, or this is where the Rishonim draw upon the Gemara in Shabbos, where masks and costumes for Purim and other times has its roots in the Gemara. Yes, it's more far-fetched than the Gemara in Chulin, which discusses Esther min HaTorah Minayin, but it's closer to home a little bit because it deals with masks. The Gemara in Chulin just looks for remuzim, looks for hints as to where is Esther hinted to in the Torah, where is Haman hinted to in the Torah, and so on and so forth, where there are masks discussed, so that's the Gemara in Shabbos in the sixth parak. We also wear costumes on Purim because there's no mention of Hashem explicitly anywhere in the Gemara, lest one believe that the salvation from Haman was just, you know, merely coincidence. So costumes remind us of Hashem's hidden involvement in miracles in the world. And you have, when you go to a Chagiga or you go to a Purim Suda, you have the people dressing up in costumes. You have the Rosh Yeshiva and Rabbeim dressed up in certain costumes. You never know. You know, the person that seems like he's not the Rosh Yeshiva is like a Rebbe, you know, and a Rosh Yeshiva and a rabbinic personality. And the rabbinic personalities are dressed up. Things aren't always what they seem. We're aware of that. One thing I will add to all of the, you know, first few minutes of the shiur and the discussion of costumes on Purim is, and all the sources, and we discussed where costumes originated from, is also the fact that costumes on Purim, we're going to mention in a few minutes what costumes are and are not appropriate, but costumes on Purim are hinted to in the Megillah, and as I told Natan earlier last week, we know, as an aside, that Hamelech in the Megillah, the Rashiva mentioned in a different context today, but Hamelech in the Megillah is a reference to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a reference to God. And even though, you know, plainly and simply, it's of course a reference to Achashverosh, but it's a reference to God. What I was telling Natan was that there are Megillahs that are sold, and they say that they are Hamelech Megillahs, right? They're sold for a lot more. They're considerably more expensive than regular Megillahs. Until when I was in the market for buying a Megillah a number of years ago, and I noticed that many, many Megillahs, I would say for sure over 50%, I would even say over 80% of Megillahs that are sold nowadays in the common market are Hamelech Megillahs. People will say, I have a unique Megillah, it's a Hamelech Megillah. Hamelech Megillah means that every column, whether it's a 42-line, 21-line, 28-line, whatever Megillah you have, the top word, the first word in each column is Hamelech. And that seems to be some like commodity. Most Megillahs are like that. So if anybody tries to sell you something and sell it to you for more, because it's a Hamelech Megillah, I have news for you and all those listening or watching from afar. We feel like you're very close. Hamelech Megillahs are nice, they're not so rare. Next question in our topic for tonight. Are all costumes allowed? What is the most appropriate, what is particularly inappropriate attire on Purim? There are two types of costumes which are questionable. The first is, we alluded to it before, cross-dressing. So for this, cross-dressing is generally usher. It's not only, you know, you didn't need me to come and give the costumes and creativity on Purim Shir. This is alluded to, as mentioned to before, the pasuk in Parshas Ki Seitze, the pasuk in Dvarim Parachav Beis, Lo Yilbash Gever Simlas Isha. But it's assumed to be mutter on Purim. It's assumed to be allowed, permitted on Purim, as the Rama details for us, if it's purely motivated by simcha. And it's purely motivated by appropriate simcha. Though this minhag of cross-dressing on Purim is obviously not without its opposing achronim, the later commentators, specifically the Shla. The Shla and the Bach in Yoredeya, the halachic commentators on Yoredeya, explained to us in Simen Kuf Pei Bet, they felt that it was inappropriate, even on a temporary basis, to dress up in costumes on Purim, and even at weddings. They saw people do shtick at weddings nowadays. So that's the way that it was also in yesteryear. And they said that it's okay as long as it's not done. These words are mentioned in the Ramah. These words are not my own. As long as it's not done derech to'eva. As long as it's not done in an abominable fashion, in an abominable manner, and in a repulsive manner, and particularly they were talking about where the features of the opposite gender would be exposed. You can do it in a way where it's appropriate, but there is a fine line and you have to be careful. That's in terms of the way that they describe appropriate dress in terms of cross-dressing. It's allowed, but you have to tread carefully. The second, and more of a analytical subtopic within appropriate and inappropriate, is whether this violates an absolute prohibition, and that is Kilayim, shatnez in Purim costumes. Fascinating subtopic. For this we turn to, are you allowed to wear Purim costumes that have shatnez? Do you have to get them checked? So for this we turn to the Gemara in the second parak of Psachim, where the Gemara in the second parak of Psachim has the principle of Dover She'ino Miskavein. When I do something without intention, I do action A that might result, for all those who are joining us from Masechet Shabbos next year, what seems to be Masechet Shabbos next year, this is different than a psik resha. Psik resha is that it's an inevitable act. It's going to result in action B and result B. Davar she'eno miskavein, an unintentional act, literally translated in English, is when you do action A, which might result in action B. Action A is fine, but action B is usur. So we paskin that davar she'ino miskaven is mutter in the Gemara. In the Gemara, we say davar she'ino miskaven is allowed in the Gemara. There's another Mishnah in Maseches Kilayim. Maseches Kilayim, the later Prakim of Kilayim, Kilayim deals with all, the Masechta deals with all forbidden mixtures. The later Prakim, the later Perek, deals with Kilei Begadim, what's known as Shatnez, a forbidden mixture of wool and linen. And the Mishnah tells us at the end of Kilayim, it seems to contradict the earlier Gemara that we quoted in Psachim, first, the Mishnah, there are two different Mishnahs in Kilayim, excuse me. The first Mishnah in Kilayim tells us that Mochri Ksus Mochrin Kedarkan, people who would sell their clothing on the street in the Shuk, are allowed to sell normally. They're allowed to sell their clothing, and you're allowed to throw Shatney's clothes over your shoulder because you intend to carry the clothes and not wear them. What's called lo yale alecha, but as long as it's just carrying and you're not wearing in a more permanent fashion, that would be okay. The problem is, this Mishnah in Kilayim is contradicted upon by another Mishnah in Kilayim. The other Mishnah in Kilayim tells us that if one is trying to get through customs and a tax collector in their particular town and city, and anything I wear, as opposed to carry, the rule is, let's say, anything I wear, the Mishnah says, will not be taxed. Anything I carry is okay. But anything I carry will be taxed. Anything I wear will not be taxed. The Mishnah tells us, even though I'm not intending to wear the shatnez, to simply try to avoid paying taxes, that I'm not allowed to do, and even wearing it on my body, I'm not allowed to wear shatnez even for those purposes. To get by the tax collector, I'm not allowed to wear shatnez if I just throw it on my clothing. The Beis Yosef, one of the commentators of the 1500s, one of the main commentators, right, Maran Beit Yosef, tells us the way to resolve this contradiction goes back to two psukim in Chumash. Very simply, just take out a Torah, open up two psukim, and those two psukim are like this. One pasuk tells us, lo tilbash shatnez, don't wear a forbidden mixture of wool and linen, don't wear shatnez. And the second pasuk tells us, beged kilayim lo ya'ale alecha. You are not allowed to have beged kilayim on you. So the Beis Yosef says, levisha, wearing is forbidden, but ha'ala'a, lo ya'ale alecha, ha'ala'a, just throwing it on you, carrying it, but not in a wearing, not in a more permanent fashion, is mutter. That's the way the Beis Yosef resolves the contradiction. The Gemara in Yevamos, the Gemara in Maseches Yevamos, further breaks down this distinction of the Beis Yosef. Of course, the Gemara came before the Beis Yosef, but the Gemara alludes to a distinction which further breaks down what we have mentioned for the Beis Yosef. Meaning, even within ha'ala'a, even within throwing it on top of you and trying to get through the tax collector, as our previous mission in Kilayim detailed, even within ha'ala'a, you can further break it up. There's what's called ha'ala'a, get this? There's what's called ha'ala'a, sheyesh bo hana'a, throwing it on top of you to go through the town, go through the border, cross the border. Very sensitive issue in politics these days. Crossing the border. So getting through halah sheyesh bo hana'a. That's on the one hand. Throwing it on you that's going to provide benefit. You're going to get benefit by wearing it. It's cold outside. You're crossing, you know, you're crossing the Canadian border, let's say. That's not really so highly connected, contested in politics these days. It's more the warmer border down south. But for our friends Badarom, but for those people who want to make themselves warm and they throw a fleece, they throw a sweatshirt, they throw a down jacket on them, so ha'alah sheyesh bo hana is a problem. If it's providing benefit, it's going to be a problem. If it's ha'alah she'in bo hana, that's okay. if it's you're throwing it on top of you not to get benefit. It's perfect weather outside. You don't need it to keep you cold. You don't need it to keep you warm. I guess it would only be really to just keep you warm. You don't need it to keep you warm, so then that's okay. As long as my intention is not to wear it, to get over the davar she'eino miskavein, even issue, even original issue, as long as my intention is not to wear it, that's okay. The Rambam says, unless you're just putting it over you, it's prohibited to wear. It's usher to wear for any reason. The way we paskin, the way we hold in halacha, the Shulchan Aruch is stringent like the Rambam, and the Ramah is lenient like the Rush. Makes sense. Sfardim paskin like Sfardim. We see this all the time in halacha, and the Ramah taking the side of the Rush. It's mutter to get dressed up, just like the bottom line in terms of, you know, shatnez issues and perm costumes. It's mutter to get dressed up in a perm costume that has shatnez because my intention is not to wear it, right? But it depends. That's only if you're wearing it on Purim and if it's just to have fun, which is the assumption here, okay? But you're not allowed to wear it if the purpose is for some other benefit and for some added benefit. You're definitely not allowed to wear it, as we mentioned before, if it's for the purpose of keeping you warm. That you're definitely not allowed to wear this shatnez. And just to conclude our first topic of the shiur, the costumes part of the shiur, the Maharil is quoted in Halacha, I've mentioned this many times, the Maharil is quoted in mainstream Halacha to say that during Kriyas HaMegillah, for Megillah reading, one should wear Big Day Shabbos. To all the parents who are watching, so I've told the boys year in, year out, and it was very nice when a few weeks ago at dinner, our Rosh Madrichim, AZ Thaw, because that is how you pronounce his last name, AZ came over to me and he said, I remember from my Shana Aleph Rebbe, when you gave this idea over, and someone came to me last year and said, when I came to the Chagiga, I came downstairs to the Chadar Ochel to dance with all the wonderful, beloved Talmidim. And somebody said, whispered in my ear, as like, you know, we started the dancing, you should get a lot of naches, because every single person was a Big Day Shabbos during Kriyas HaMegillah. I'm one of the first people. I am very pro-costume. I've told all the boys that. I've told everybody that. After Kriyas HaMegillah, the Maharil tells us, get into a costume. Be in it for the Chagiga. Be in it for the Suda. Paris Mappa might be a little trickier. But be in it for the Suda. But during Kriyas HaMegillah, it's proper to wear Big Day Shabbos. And that's how the Kaf HaChaim, one of the halacha commentators from 250 years ago, Paskins, in Tufres Tzarihei, in Hilchos Megillah, where he asks the question a little bit more of a strong tone of how could you take, you know, Pirsume Nisa and a story that both have tragedy and triumph seriously if you're in some type of joking, you know, clothing. You should be in some serious clothing. You should be in Big Day Shabbos. You should be in better clothing than during the week. That's the appropriate. And then right after, you can be the first one to run down to your room and change into the costume. I highly recommend it. I know we're not in the English library, but I highly recommend it. Next question. What are the issues with Purim Shvils? Oh boy. Rav Avadya Yosef. Rav Avadya was known as very anti. Rav Avadya Yosef in Yechaveh Das, Rav Avadya Yosef tells us in Yechaveh Das, Chelek Hei, Tshuva Nun. There's no doubt that those involved in the activity of Purim Shpils and Purim Skits violate a severe prohibition where they mock rabbis and teachers and whoever else purely for the sake of holiness, purely for the sake of mocking and frivolity. As the Gemara in Shabbos, this is a stirring Gemara. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Testament Beis, tells us that one of the reasons that Yerushalayim was destroyed, not the Beis HaMikdash, the truth is the Gemara says this is the only reason that Yerushalayim is a city. Uvnei osa bekarov b'yameinu binyan olam. But when Yerushalayim was originally destroyed, and when they couldn't, the Ramban speaks about not being able to gather up a minyan in Yerushalayim, let alone beyond Yerushalayim, the Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Yud Testament Beis tells us the only reason Yerushalayim was destroyed years ago was due to the mocking and disgracing of Talmidei Chachamim. and the carelessness of making fun of the everyday Jew also, which the Gemara in Bava Metzia echoes. The Gemara in Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Dalet Amud Beis, tells us, Rav Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, who is known from the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, very easy to remember, Lag Baomer, Lamed Gimel, the story of Rav Elazar hiding with his son in the cave, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So Rav Elazar, the son of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, was punished for hearing someone disgraced and disparaged Talmidei Chachamim as he remained silent. An innocent bystander? I think not, says the Gemara. You have to come to the Talmud Chacham's aid. How much more so for those who benefit and enjoy and who are active in making fun and mocking with and mocking at their, whoever it is, whether it's any other, you know, people of authority, people of a certain respect, or whatever, to make fun, and even to make fun of friends. It's like what one Rebbe of a another Shana Ba'aretz program said, this goes back at least 15 years ago. He said, what, you're going to ask your friend, yeah, it's cool that like we make fun of you, right? Like the perm spiel. You think he's going to object? He's going to be embarrassed to tell you no. He wants to go along with it. All of his other chaverim, all of his other friends are being mocked in the perm spiel. We have to tread lightly. Many of the perm spiels are done bekashrus. They're done wonderfully. Mahadrin mina mahadrin, they're done wonderfully. But we have to be careful. They should be done bituv tam vadas. They should be done with a certain tam. You were in yeshiva all year. People were in yeshiva all year. That's how the perm spiel should be done. There is a fine line, of course, but there is a way to do it where the jokes can be very funny, done in a very positive flavor. Done in a very positive taste. Done in good taste. But Rav Avadya doesn't stop there. He just goes on and on where he mentions the rivash, the chayos u'tshuvos, the responsa of the rivash. The rivash lived in Spain in the 1300s, where the rivash says, the rivash is a student of the Ran. He's also quoted, for the Bnei Yeshiva and anybody else listening, he's quoted in the Shita Mekubetzes a lot. Not completely anonymously, but he's quoted a lot of the comments come from the Rivash, and the Rivash tells us in Simon Mendalit of his Tshuvas that if the Jewish people have a minhag that's usher and that makes fun of Talmidei Chachamim, we have to get rid of that minhag. We haven't gotten rid of that minhag, but we have to tread lightly. Anybody who's involved in the spiel has to look it over 10 times. And I'm not saying literally 10, but you have to look it over a few times. You should get somebody to look it over with you and ask a million times, you think this is okay? Do you think this is okay? Making sure, because God forbid, as another, you know, posek, a posek that everybody in this room has heard from, including Rav Avadya said this, Rav Avadya in those tshuvas, in Yechaveh Da'as Chelek Hei, says this, do you want to enter Purim, which has a koach hatfila with blood on your hands, as the Gemara tells us in Ksubos? The Gemara in Ksubos tells us that kol amal ben p'nei chavero barabim ki'ilu shofech damim. You don't want to have blood on your hands. So you have to be very careful. That's what Rav Avadya ends his tshuva off with. And I saw this in a couple of the other later commentaries. We have to be very careful. Another creative aspect of Purim is the noise-making at the mention of Haman's name. Why is the noise-making at the mention of Haman's name necessary? Where does that originate from? The Rama tells us in Orachayim Siman Tov Reis Tzadi, the purpose of noise-making at the mention of Haman's name is to erase his name based on the commandment to erase the name of Amalek, because Haman, as we know, is a descendant of Amalek, a descendant of Agag. It's a fulfillment of Mechias Amalek. It's a minhag reserved for children. Why is the minhag of noisemaking for Haman reserved for children? So the children used to draw images. It all came from art, and it came from creativity on Purim. It came from drawing pictures. The Tzuras Haman and the Tzuras Ha'oyev, the form and the image of the enemy on stones or sticks, and during Megillah reading, they would rub them together, they would make some kind of noise, and they would bang them and rub them together, and they would hit them against each other, thereby rubbing out Haman's name. And that was how they merited to erasing the name of Amalek and erasing the name of Haman's descendant. That's where the minhag originated from, if anybody asks you. And beyond where the minhag originated from, that's why the minhag is so necessary. It's reserved for children, listen carefully, because Purim, as opposed to its cousin Hanukkah, Purim is more of a children's holiday than Hanukkah. And I don't mean for all of the creativity and the dressing up and the banging and the making noise for Haman. Of course that, but that we already mentioned. I mean the lahashmir, la'arog, la'abed, the destroying and annihilation, the supposed annihilation, the attempted annihilation of the Jewish people, included everybody. Men, women, children, anashim, nashim, v'taf, which is unlike Hanukkah, because Hanukkah, the spiritual annihilation, refers to one thing and one thing specifically, and that's destroying of mitzvos, getting rid of mitzvos. Mila, bris mila, chodesh, rosh chodesh, Antiochus, not the first Antiochus, Antiochus the fourth. We discussed in the institution and history of Hanukkah and Erev Hanukkah at our shiur in the English library a couple of months ago, that some of you joined us for. And children are not chayev in mitzvos. That's the interesting distinction made. Purim included everybody. Physical annihilation that everybody was targeted. Hanukkah, not that way. There is a creative component, of this mitzvah in what instrument, what banging, noise-making instrument should be used. The Avudraham, Rav David ben Yosef, one of these Spanish later Rishonim of the 1300s, tells us in his Sefer Tfilas Purim, what a beautiful name for a Sefer, the minhag to erase Haman's name using stones is a fulfillment of a pasuk in Nach, fulfillment of the pasuk in Mishle, in the 10th parak of Mishle, Shem Rishayim Yirkov, that the name of our enemies should rot. And it's why using a grogger with Haman's name on it that can be erased through your noisemaking is the preferred method of erasing Haman's name. Rashi, we go all the way back to Rashi. Rashi in Sefer Dvarim, Perek Chafei, Pasuk Yotes, in Psukim that we just read 48 hours ago. Within 48 hours ago, even less than 2 days ago, and that is Parsha Zachor, where Rashi tells us that writing Haman's name on the groggers is intended to teach us that not only is there a mitzvah to physically destroy Amalek, but there's also a mitzvah to erase any reference to his name, wherever it may be written as well. The minhag, we should just know, of using stones and groggers, the minhag of using stones and groggers later evolved into using planks of wood as well. We know that the plastic groggers, it depends how durable the wooden ones, but you know, the ones that they send in, let's say, gift packages, so the plastic ones, ironically enough, are more durable than the wooden ones, so get yourself a wooden one. But they used to make planks of wood and make them into groggers. The Mishnah Brura in Siman Tov Reis Tzadi tells us that it's best to stomp with your feet on the floor whenever you hear the name of Haman. And banging your shoes together at the mention of Haman, that goes back at least 100 years. But not to get too creative, and when I was a kid, where I grew up in the shul, every year, by the first Haman, there would be the regular, you know, groggers. And then there'd be a guy at the end, and there'd be the cap guns, of course. And there'd be a guy in the back who would have a trumpet. I'm not kidding you, a trumpet. And he would play some type of niggun. So that's what's advised against that, because that brings about, you know, a joyous, I hate to mention this, but I will just for the purpose of the shiur, that when I was with everybody in this room who went to Poland, because I went last year, this year, so we went to Poland and we first walk into Auschwitz. We pass the famous sign. The first picture that we look at is the orchestra playing. Right, while Jews were tortured. So this would be the exact opposite, except for the fact that we know, to us, instruments are used at a wedding. Instruments are used at a chagiga. Instruments are used at celebratory events, not when we're mentioning the name of Oso Russia, not when we're mentioning the name of Haman HaRussia. So not to use a trumpet or a saxophone or any other or any other musical instrument, because that seems like it's a joyous event. There are also different minhagim, interestingly enough, as to when one makes noise. I don't know what the yeshiva does here, because I've never been here, but there are minhagim that they do the first and the last. There are other minhagim where they do every one. The most interesting minhag is neither of those. Not the first three and last three, not every one, not the first and last, not only the first time. Chabad has a minhag. Chabad has a minhag to lane only when Haman's name is attached to an accolade or a description. Haman ha-Agagi, Haman ha-Rasha. Specific, where it doesn't just say Haman, but it adds a description along with Haman's name. I know Chabad has that minhag, and there are others. It's also quoted in the Sefer HaMinhagim, as well as the Aruch HaShulchan. And the Tzos HaShulchan has the minhag to only bang during the segment that discusses the downfall of the Aseres Pnei Haman, including the names of Haman that appear at least twice during that whole segment. So those are interesting minhagim. The Ben Ish Chai, from the 1800s, of course, the Ben Ish Chai tells us that there's a minhag to bang during the first and last mention of Haman in the Megillah. The minhag of making noise for Haman is a very important minhag which should be preserved. We also should point out that there's an idea of kreplach when you clap. Many of the parents joining us will probably be more familiar with this. Kreplach when you clap means we eat kreplach, right? Those meat-filled pastries. They're so delicious. And the kreplach when you clap means we eat it 3 days a year. You're the minhag. When you clap al chet, we eat it on Erev Yom Kippur. We obviously don't eat it on Yom Kippur, obviously. Please. But kreplach when you clap al chet, kreplach when you clap hoshanas, chavitas harava, when you beat the harava, which the Gemara in the fourth parak of Sukkah, we should know where that originates too. The chavitas harava, the minhag. Minhag hanaviyim, yisod hanaviyim, minhag hanaviyim, takanas hanaviyim, the minhag hanaviyim to beat the arava those 5 times, not beat your younger sibling over the head with the arava, beat the arava on the ground 5 and that's it. So that's a day you come home, Hoshana Rabbah, there's an idea, there's an inyan to have a whole festive suit on Hoshana Rabbah. Hoshana Rabbah is a yontif, it's a celebratory day. And the third is to have kreplach at the Purim Suda. Haman Tashin is a separate idea. I'm talking about the kreplach when you clap. Not just, you know, alliteration. It's not just a nice title like costumes and creativity on Purim, Ben. But it's, you know, it alludes to the whole clapping, to the beating out, to the destroying of the bad, so that we're able to merit the good. Whether it's your sins, whether it's your, you know, the gzar din, you know, the final decree of the din of what your year is going to look like, dished out on Hoshana Rabbah. And the same thing with clapping and banging, making noise for Haman. The last part of the shir is the creative applications of Mishloach Manos. And we start off with the most creative. We're going to give a few examples at a time, but the Tzitz Eliezer of Eliezer Waldenberg, one of the Achronim, in Chelek Tes of his Tshuvas, Simen Gimel, says that you are not allowed to, believe it or not, this was a shaila, this was a question brought up, how creative is creative when it gets to Mishloach Manos Ish L'Reyehu? You're not allowed to, he said, not too creative, because you're not allowed to fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos with cigarettes, that was a real shaila, with svarim, or even money, which the recipient can then buy with food, can buy for food. The Nitei Gavriel points out that there is a minority view that allows women to send clothes to other women as Mishloach Manos. But according to Halacha and the Gemara, we know the Gemara mentions this on Zayin Amud Aleph and Megillah before the more famous Gemaras on the other side of the page. The Gemara in Megillah says you have to send 2 ready-to-eat foods to one person. But I want to clarify to all those listening at home, the same way, and all those listening here, the same way that we clarified Big Day Shabbos for Kriyas and Megillah, we'll say with Mishloach Manos, to send real food. I love Reese's. But you can send the Reese's peanut butter cups and any other variation, the fancy Reese's, you can send them the sticks and the goo, whatever you want, after you've already sent one real Mishloach Manos. What's a real Mishloach Manos? So it has to be meal food items. I send the same Mishloach Manos every year. I send the same Mishloach Manos every year. A pack of deli. I find out what the person likes. He likes smoked turkey. He likes salami. A pack of it will not be that expensive. 14 shek, maximum of 20 shek if you get a really big one. 14 shekel of a pack of salami. There's no din of lechem mishnah on Purim. There is Friday night, but there's no din of lechem mishnah on Purim. But I give him two rolls. This year my recipient likes coleslaw, but I happen to love potato salad, so I'm usually thinking potato salad. You know, I'm definitely a juice guy, but you get the idea. You're sending somebody a pack of salami. You'll do the fruit by the foot and the candy and the Reese's after. There's no isser in doing that. There's no prohibition in doing that, but I want to clarify so that we go into Purim and it's not like your kindergarten, elementary school, or high school Purim, so that you're an adult. You've worked so hard, as I mentioned previously a couple of weeks ago, on a Thursday night, we're going to remember on Thursday and Friday and how to behave and act. We've worked so hard for this point. Wouldn't it be beautiful if we celebrated Purim perfectly? And a perfect Purim means, at the very least, a halachic Purim. You don't have to give 10 mishloach manos. Give one, give it right. Real meal food, a potato kugel, you know, Shabbos, whatever, but something where the person, it's not just a snack. You can give, and it does count as two foods. You can give somebody, find out what they like, and go to your favorite shawarma joint and buy the person a shawarma lafa, a schnitzel lafa. You can do that. I think it's just a nice thing to do as a Baal Midos to get him a drink to wash it down with. That is up to you. But in terms of halacha, you can get, because you have bread, you have fries, chips, you have hummus. I love hummus. You have hummus and you have veggies. Alex told me I'm allowed to do one shtick thing, so I'm allowed to tell people that I absolutely love hummus. But that counts as two foods. You're allowed to do that, Solomon, right? You're allowed to do that. Get the potato chips and the candy after. Get the potato chips and the candy and the Reese's and the fruit by the foot and the gushers after. Make sure that you do a real Mishloach Manos first. Rav Avadya, who we quoted before, many of you probably didn't like what he had to say before, but the Gemara says that if you make fun of people and they don't, they don't agree, that, and I left out a couple of the Makoros because I thought that we were, you know, harif enough, but you should really be careful and go over the spiel before. There, it's very easy to tell what's done. You know, again, I'll just reiterate, just because we left out a couple of the Makoros, I'll just say before we conclude with the last creative applications of Mishloach Manos, that it's very easy to tell. Very easy to tell what goes over the line a little bit. So let's be careful and check 100 times if you need to. I have this other thing where I say, and I have no problem saying it on tape and saying it on the camera, that it boggles my mind. You can disagree, I don't care, but it bothers me very much that now videos, because of the wonderful advent of YouTube, and it is wonderful, and the wonderful existence of the internet, there are still Purim spiels that are up from a year ago, from 2 years ago. Keep it up for 1 month, for 2 months, maybe it's up from a year. It doesn't need to stay there. La'ad la'olme olamim, laman yamdu yamin rabim, to quote the pasuk from Nach. It doesn't need to be there. Not everybody needs to see, you know, the mocking of the Rebbe. And you're going to have people who will look into the yeshiva who have nothing to do with the yeshiva, whether it's Hakotel or other wonderful yeshivot, who don't know anything from the Rabbeim except for the Purim spiel. What a terrible thing. What a terrible thing. So, in my personal opinion, wonderful Purim spiels, but if you think it's going to go over the line, let it stay up there for a little bit. Nothing on YouTube has the decree from the Pasuk in Yirmiyah, I promise you, of L'man Yamdu Yamim Rabim. That's not the way that I learned, you know, the later part of the prophet Yirmiyah. Just a couple of more sources in terms of the creative applications of Mishloach Manos. From Ephraim Greenblatt from Memphis, in his Sefer River Vos Ephraim, says that you cannot fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos by sending medicine, even if it's pleasant tasting. Even if it's pleasant tasting. And you also have to keep in mind who the recipient is. Because he says in that same tshuva, interestingly enough, if the person's a vegetarian, or if one of our previous attendees is, you know, is a celiac, you can't send him food that's going to make him allergic. You can't send a vegetarian meat. You do not fulfill Mishloach Manos that way. Halacha l'maisa. According to pure halacha, you do not fulfill it that way. So you should find out. You don't have to find out that he likes coleslaw versus potato salad. I like to go lifnim mishur asadin. I like to go above and beyond the letter of the law. And I'm sure you all do. You don't have to find out what his favorite foods are, but you should make sure that the person is going to eat those foods. The Binyan Tzion, who has many other interesting tshuvos, I advise you to check them out. Rav Etlinger, the author of the Arach Laner, and for those from the New York area, so they might have in other areas also, but I know that they have the Breuer's School, K-A-J, Kahal Adas Yeshurin, of Rav Schwab Zatzal. There have been a couple of Etlingers in the 21st century who have gone to school in the recent years in Washington Heights. Those are, you know, a Ben Achar Ben or a Bas Achar Ben from the Arach Laner, interestingly. But from the term Mishloach Manos, or Shalach Manos, the way the people say it quickly, from the term Mishloach Manos, you could say that you specifically have to send the Mishloach Manos through a messenger. By proxy, you have to send it through a messenger, through a shaliach. If that's true, so that's just, you have to take a step back, one can wonder whether the delivery must have the status of a shaliach. When a deliverer, excuse me. Can a non-Jew deliver? Can a non-Jew deliver shalach manos? Does it have to be a Jew who's over bar mitzvah? Is a katan? Is a minor included in shlichus? Interesting questions. We just close with the following, that we know that one of the interesting questions is if you give Mishloach Manos and the recipient is mochel, he does not accept, he refuses to accept the package, so are you Yotze? The Ramah says, even if the intended recipient does not accept the package, the sender fulfills the mitzvah. That's the way the Ramah decides lahalacha. And lehalacha, we paskin that anyone, halacha l'maisa, we paskin that anyone can deliver Mishloach Manos, because we paskin that they don't absolutely need to be delivered through a shaliach. It's not Mishloach Manos, black on white, literally understood. We should all, again, as I said before, merit to celebrate Purim in health, in good health, together as B'nai Yeshiva, celebrating all of our accomplishments. I look forward to seeing you all on the dance floor this coming Thursday night, Shavua Shechalbo, this coming Thursday night. Our celebration and dancing is the close kesher that we share, the Torah that we've shared, which has been a tremendous amount. Just think about the Torah that you've been exposed to, together with me, with the other Rabbeim, together with your Chavrusos and Chaverim. That's what we're celebrating, and the Ezrat Hashem in the Suda as well. Thank you all for coming and joining.